Blog Talk Radio.
This is Political Gravity with Jane Hoffman, Don Gallimore, John Yoder, and Albert. We're coming to you live from two different parts of the United States. That would be Minnesota and Southern California. Don is calling in from Reno. Tonight's topic is homegrown terrorism. In the last 2 years, the U.S. has been plagued with lone wolf terrorists who only later affiliated themselves with ISIS. 9 people were injured by a knife point in St. Cloud in a mall by a man who was identified by the Somalian community. They did not release the name yet, and we don't know his age. The Central Minnesotan Somali community is in distress, and we are afraid of the consequences of this incident, said Mahmoud Mohammed, executive director of the St. Cloud Area Somali Salvation Organization at a news conference. We are being made again to suffer for their acts. They are minorities in our faith. Islam is peace. Our community in central Minnesota has no relationship with ISIS or any other Islamic terrorist group. And I might add, nationwide, locally, or internationally. Mohammed said, adding that much of the local Somali residents fled to St. Cloud to escape groups like ISIS. Now, as we know, or you may not know, there has been discrimination in St. Cloud schools of Somalian kids by local whites, and there's also been bullying regarding their code of dress. So there has been tension specifically in the St. Cloud area. Many people who live outside of Minnesota would not know that. Another thing that you have to bear in mind is that Minneapolis-St. Paul are the major metropolitan area. And that means that, I'm sorry, I had an interruption from one of my co-hosts. That means that the Minneapolis-St. Paul area has had an influx of tens of thousands of Africans since the mid-1980s. The outlying areas, places like Duluth, St. Cloud, Winona, and Rochester, in southern Minnesota, it's more of a mix of Indian and Mexican heritage. In Duluth, we have a small handful of a Somali and Ethiopian population at University of Minnesota, Duluth. Some people in rural Minnesota are not equipped to handle changing demographics, changing neighborhoods, and actually the definition and contour of a formerly Scandinavian German communities into a more diverse community with mixed heritage and religion. With that, I'm going to bypass to one of John's songs until my host call in.
Is the answer
By John Yoder. Don has called in, and John should be calling in shortly. Don, let me just brush you up. I haven't unmuted you yet. A homegrown terrorist similar to the one in San Bernardino brought a kitchen knife, no less, in a private security guard uniform into a St. Cloud, Minnesota mall, brazenly and lightly stabbed 9 people, ineffectively, I might add, nobody died, and then asked one person if they were Islamic, because he is. In other words, if you're not one of my kind, then I'm going to stab you. Then he was shot dead by an off-duty police officer in the mall who did not particularly live in that city or even that county. The 9 people went to the hospital. Everybody lived. The only one who experienced a serious injury was a puncture wound, and supposedly they're coming out okay. The Islamic community in St. Cloud, which is already under scrutiny, is in fear of white retribution, and you are capable of commenting on this because it all boils down to changing demographics and non-tolerance. So with that, I'll pull you in. I might also want to add, during the news conference, they didn't release any names, just the sexes and ages of the people who were injured. And it was the Islamic community that revealed to the national media the descent, which is Somalian, of the person with the knife. Good evening, Don. How are you doing, and are you still on your tri-state convention?
I am not on my tri-state convention that finished this morning at 11 o'clock, approximately 10:30, 11 o'clock. And then I spent an hour and a half with the kids and grandkids, and then I went to work. And I'm just getting off work right now canvassing one of our
I won't burn you out. If you can only stay for 15 minutes, it's understandable. John is tardy for the party, and
okay.
Albert said he would be calling in, and I gave everybody an assignment except for you because of your schedule to prepare a 10-minute monologue of a topic that they're well-versed in national news this week. So because of your heavy schedule, you don't always get the headline news, but there were 3 so-called explosions or similarities to terrorism acts this week in the U.S. New York, New Jersey, and Minnesota, they all happened on a Saturday night. The East Coast had explosions, but Minnesota, as I mentioned, had a person in the mall with a knife.
Okay.
So
no,
I will not belabor you, but first I would like to ask you, I did listen to the archive and gathered more information from your tri-state meeting, and also what's on your mind tonight in the national public news and also locally?
Locally here in Reno. Well, basically what we're doing, my organizations and the NACP with tri-state, that's Idaho, Utah, and Nevada. It's the combination of those states that makes up a state convention. In this case, we call it Tri-State. So we hosted the Tri-State annual convention here in Reno, Nevada, Circus Hotel, And we got a lot done. Yeah, and we got a lot done in terms of panelists. We had an set of exceptional workshops yesterday, Saturday. They went 13 hours, but they were some of the most esteemed administrators in the state. In all actuality, we had a couple of the DAs, the FBI, Department of Justice. We had one who was a state education administrator. So we had, and these are along with superintendents and corporate heads and governmental bosses. So we had an extraordinary day yesterday with our workshops. But with Pat, my wife, she moderated some because she was the host president of the NAACP. And we are the host branch this time. So she was able to be on the panel and MC moderate. And it was just a wonderful time that everybody had. But we also were able to get a little bit of business done, a lot of eating, and essentially everybody went home with a good impression of Reno and the NAACP Tri-State Convention.
Good. I remember you mentioned that workshop and activities you were working on to reduce people getting non-desirable tickets and just generally being picked on.
Right.
I did have something I wanted to read from you, and I know you're going to say that I know what your reaction is going to be, but I'm going to read it anyway.
Go for it.
It's a headline article from the City Pages, which is Minneapolis-St. Paul's biggest alternative newspaper. It says St. Cloud is the worst place in Minnesota to be Somalian. So can I just read a few paragraphs and then you can gather. Basically, you, a lot of the things you deal with are American black problems, but here's another issue. I'll just make it fast because it's rather interesting. Lal Hersey sat in her idling minivan at a stoplight in downtown St. Cloud. Her window was rolled down to invite in the evening summer breeze, her phone tucked in her hijab against her ear like a makeshift Bluetooth receiver. "Hey, you," a woman's voice suddenly brayed from the next car. "Hey, you, I'm talking to you, Somalian lady." Hersey turned to find a white woman leaning out of the passenger window, her eyes piercing with confrontational energy, while her husband watched wordlessly from the driver's seat. "What?" Hersey asked. "Are you too lazy to carry that phone in your hand?" "Yes," Hersey retorted without skipping a beat. "Can you come and carry it for me?" The white woman's smugness evaporated. She started bellowing a chorus familiar to Somalis in St. Cloud, that they only come to eat welfare. They would be better if they all went back to Africa. Hersey's preferred response, if she could help herself, was a pointed non-response. The purse of a lip, the roll of an eye, but in moments of weakness, when invective crept hot under her skin, she couldn't help but return fire. "I just came from work, for God's sake," yelled Hersey. "I pay taxes. I think you're used to insulting people who don't know how to talk back. Next time you attack someone, maybe you should be sure they know English or not." When the light finally turned green, the white woman's husband stomped on the gas. Hersey was left shouting through the exhaust. "I just went off on her," Hersey reflects with a sigh of remorse. "I just talked to her the way she wanted me to talk to her. But at some point you feel like I need to defend myself. They'll do this to the next person they will find." St. Cloud has been Hersey's home for 14 years. Unfortunately for her, it's the worst place in Minnesota to be Somalian. Hersey is divorced, single mother of four. She works as a freelance interpreter at St. Cloud Hospital. Now in her mid-40s, she inhabits a shape obscured by a long dress and motherhood, adorned with a pink headscarf. At a Caribou in the Crossroads Mall, she sips sugary coffee with lips tinted plum. When civil war broke out in Somalia in the early 1990s, Hersey escaped to San Diego under the care of International Organization for Migration. She later moved to Marshall, Minnesota, where she lived among kindly neighbors who waved and came knocking on her door bearing gently used items. This is getting to me. Americans, she marveled early on, would stuff their garage with things they no longer needed to free up space they gave to charity. She collected these donations for other refugees as Lutheran Social Services as a volunteer. When she joined the League of Women Voters, her friends were ladies from all over the world. They wove potluck spreads of international bread soups and sweets, eating over conversations about where they'd been, what they planned to do in America. Marshall, Minnesota wasn't a diverse place, Hersey reflects, but it was a welcoming town, a nice town. In 2001, her then-husband lost his job at Heartland Food because the company was closing. They moved to St. Cloud for new employment. The first wave of refugees came to St. Cloud at the beckoning of Governor Tim Pawlenty, bound for the meatpacking factories peppering the Mississippi Riverbank. Their willingness to do arduous work for little pay led to friction with the unions. But it wasn't until 2010 that the population erupted. A community took shape. Families from all over the U.S. arrived in search of relatives. The city nickname White Cloud became 10% Somali, and they seem to be the threshold where welcome signs came down. Right now it's bad, Hersey says. It stinks. It's sad and pathetic right now to be in this town. Graffiti began showing up on Somali storefronts. Someone plastered pornographic posters of the Prophet Muhammad on light posts. There were days her daughters came home from school red-eyed and drained. They were targets for flying food in the lunchroom. Hallways were rampant with pushing and shoving, hijab pulling and name-calling. It all came down with persistent demands that they go back to their own country. When Muslims in St. Cloud announced their intention to build a new mosque in 2013, the city council was flooded with thousands of comments warning that it would jam residential roads and allow terrorism to fester. Islam is a direct threat to our national security. It must be stopped, one email warned. Another wrote, if the Somalis can't accept our clothing style, our laws, our religion, then get out of Dodge. Churches and veterans groups took to hosting anti-refugee speakers such as former California Border Patrol Ron Branster, who claims resettlement is a taxpayer-funded veil for corporations to traffic in slave labor, and cunning Muslims to push Sharia law on Middle America. It's a thesis faithfully nurtured by White Bear Cable Access host Tim McKinley, a fringe blogger, and Ann Corcoran, Wilmer podcaster Bob Enyos, and the St. Cloud columnist A.J. Kern. Then came rumors. In December, Facebook posts shared more than 3,000 times, a woman chronicled in the infuriating account of a Muslim cashier at a St. Cloud Walmart who refused to check out a Christian customer unless she removed her cross necklace. A manager allegedly doubled down on the cashier's demands. Battling responses vacillated from dismay to skepticism to charged calls to mobilize a militia. I find it funny how all I hear about is we are supposed to accept and be tolerant of all these blanking people when they can just blank all over us, one commentator wrote. Time to lock and load and defend what's ours. Days later, the St. Cloud Times published a fact check. Both Walmarts in the city denied the incident ever happened. There were no eyewitnesses and nothing on security cameras. The author of the rumor could not produce a name for her persecuted heroine. The original post was removed. With all these going on, I think, Lord have mercy. When we go outside, let's just be safe, Hersey says. You send your kids to school, but you don't know what's going to happen. I pray to God every day that they come back home safe. It is tense. Perched on the counter of a pharmacy, Hajjah Youssef looked out into the bustling parking lot of a Somali village shopping center at a team of young men pushing a car with a dead battery out of traffic. Haji is a longtime resident of St. Cloud, a graduate of St. Cloud, and the owner of three businesses. He recounts the brisk October morning when the owners in this swath of Somali-owned shops returned to work only to find pig intestines coiled around the door handles, excrement smeared all over the sidewalk. Everybody that came to this country one way or another intimidated and harassed, but this level of hate towards Islam, towards Muslim, is unheard of. We have a big problem with that here, the pockets of discrimination. Once a pickup driver pulled over beside his wife as she pushed their baby in a stroller, chucked an empty water bottle at her head, and yelled at her to go back to Somalia. On another night, Haji and his wife were speaking Somali in a grocery store when a woman turned to them, chastising them, "Speak English. This is why we all hate you." It doesn't do too well when families need feeding and the American dream needs living, Haji believes. He concluded that the hostility is a consequence of myths about Somalians that find fertile ground in St. Cloud. Popular belief persists that refugees get cars, free houses, free cell phones, free everything from the government, and they don't get taxed for 7 years. Haji laughs. "The first year you come to this country, you get taxed," he said, clapping his fists against the ball of his palm. "It's tax, tax, tax." The vandalism of the Somali village brought Governor Mark Dayton to the town in October. At that time, Dayton had been heavily criticized in the Twin Cities for his perceived neutrality on police killings and Minnesota's worst-in-the-nation financial gap between blacks and whites. At the St. Cloud Public Library, Dayton spoke straight to the immigrants in a diverse crowd. "Minnesota is not like it was 30 to 50 years ago, but this Minnesota, and you have every right to be here. Anybody who cannot accept your right to be here should find another state." Some of the audience were not convinced. Whites accused Somalians of refusing to assimilate. Somalians bit back, saying whites wouldn't accept their efforts. One man accused the Council of American Islamic Relations, a Muslim civil rights organization, of terrorism. A pastor went fully AWOL on logic, urging unity among Americans while leaving the selfishness to the Chinese. A demure elderly man responded to the government apologetically. He didn't want to be labeled a racist, he said. He just wanted the right to question. What does a refugee settlement cost and how much of it falls on taxpayers? Okay, I'll stop there. What do you think?
Thanks for waking me up. What the hell was all of that? That was 25 minutes of...
You know what, Don? Did you hear the part about the pig intestines?
The what?
That white people put pig intestines on Somalian business owners' cars in a shopping center run by Somalis.
Okay, what is the common denominator of all of this? Everything that you just said, every word you just said for the last 25 minutes. It's white hate. And that means that whites hate. And this is abnormally horrible. This is ultimate disdain for a people. The Somalis are not only black, for the most part, they're some of the blackest ones there are, but they're also Islamic. So they've got a double whammy coming at them when they're in here. Now, you said it really well when you said, can't we all understand that we're Americans when we become American? Yes, but we still have to fight, clitoral chopping, at birth for girls, and other mutilations and brandings and tattoos and everything else, piercings, all of that stuff is body mutilation, and that has to be taught out of their cultures. And the Somalis, people from India, they practice those traits almost as much. So if they're going to have pig intestines on their cars, that's the worst desecration they can have, pretty much, besides their bodies.
Yeah, I was going to mention to you that the Sudanese are dark-skinned, but a lot of Somalians are very light-skinned with soft, curly hair.
Bottom line,
you're mixing up it's near the Horn of Africa. I work with an Ethiopian. They're generally light-skinned, I hate to tell you.
Okay. That's fine. They're black. It don't matter. They can be light-skinned. They can be white with curly hair. They still don't get some kind of retribution or derogatory treatment, no matter what. That's what white people don't understand. People of color know that, that they are already at a disadvantage because of their skin color. It's very, very overt, and white people make it very obvious. Just like you said, I mean, they wear their looks on their sleeve. I mean, if you've ever seen the hatred in a white person's eyes, it's unbelievable. It's strong. It's powerful. It's disgusting. It's one of the ugliest things you can see as a human being. So I can only imagine what a white person would feel in that angry mode, how their intestines are churning, how their blood pressure is at a boiling point.
Well, first of all, they're in the middle. St. Cloud is in the center of the state. It is not exactly rural. It's probably in the top 7 Minnesota cities as far as population. Like it said, the population has exploded there, but it's rural in a provincial aspect that people are backwards. Or we do have an anonymous caller. It could be from New York or anywhere, because I advertised on Craigslist for Somalians and local Minnesota residents to call in. So let's take this call.
All right, go for it.
Hey, how's
hello,
it going?
This is...
You guys hear me?
Hi, it's Jane and Don from Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Listen, I just really wanted to get some advice. I know y'all are talking about the recent terror attacks in St. Cloud. I just wanted to get some advice to all the people out there. If you don't want to die in a terrorist attack, there's one phrase that you need to learn, and you really need to take this one to heart. Look, I really don't care what your religion is. It's not a matter of religion. It's a matter of personal safety. But you need to learn how to say, La ilaha illa Allah. La ilaha illa Allah, Muhammad Rasulullah. And if you can say
that,
they won't stab you. That means but the thing is, like, if somebody's got a gun in your face, they're like, are you a Muslim?
Man.
You got to prove it. Blah, 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 blah. You say, La ilaha illallah, and then
don't let him talk.
La ilaha illallah, and then you don't die. It's that easy, you know?
Okay,
so,
lived with Muslims, and I'm actually a Christian. I grew up in Minnesota, but I lived all over. I lived with Muslims from Sierra Leone in Southern California. What would be your suggestion? First of all, the news was so sloppy about this story. They didn't even get it straight in the beginning. First of all, they didn't identify what the motive of the person with the knife was. First of all, it made it look like he was anti-Muslim, but in the end he was pro-Muslim. They haven't released his name. Anyways, what do you think about the whole incident beyond what you just said about what to say and what not to say?
I mean, look, nobody even died, right? It's all injuries, am I right?
It's all injuries.
It was a kitchen knife.
It was probably
he's
very
probably
dull.
Stupid. He doesn't even know how to buy a gun.
Exactly.
Dumb
exactly.
Immigrants, right?
Right.
Right, could you repeat that phrase again so I can look it up on Google Translate, please? I know it sounds naive, but could you just repeat that phrase?
It's lost.
La ilaha ill Allah.
Okay.
Muhammad.
Well, I think that, you know what, Don?
We get a
lot of anonymous callers on this radio show, including the Sasquatch Society, and I really don't think that's bad advice. I was just teaching somebody at work.
It's okay to say words of peace
if you're in fear.
Well, make sure the damn word is a word of peace. I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
You gotta rehearse that. Listen, all I'm saying is
you piece of shit. Fuck you.
No. Hey, look it up. It's called the Nasheed. That's one word. It's the Nasheed. And look, I'm not even a Muslim, but if you look that up, they asked that in the attacks in Kenya, the mall attacks, you know, the Westgate Mall attacks in Kenya. They asked that. They had people try to say the Nasheed, and if they couldn't say the Nasheed, they would shoot them. So if you want to not die
in a
Muslim terror attack, you just have to shout
the
Nasheed over and over again.
Well, it's cool in the sense that you're educating us, because Well, I just read a 15-minute story about this Somalian woman who was emotionally battered by white Minnesotans who did not accept her. It was like little innuendos and overt feelings of shame. But she did first resettle here in a smaller town called Marshall, in which she was accepted. And then she later moved to St. Cloud, where there was a large conglomerate of white people who didn't accept the 10% resettlement of these Somalians, which is what I mean by 10% is that they ended up becoming 10% of the population. So it was kind of a sensitive story because it was a long story in the City Pages in Minneapolis, which is a very good magazine, but it just goes to show over years how they had to suffer, including their children in schools. It was worse than anything that ever happened in France, I can guarantee you that. So, by the way, what state are you calling from?
North Carolina.
Oh, cool. I know there's some Islamic people in there because wasn't there something going on in North Carolina about a year ago, a shooting on a campus? By a Muslim? Do you remember that?
Not that I can recall. I remember there was a thing where somebody on the campus of Chapel Hill that drove a car onto the quad of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, ran a bunch of people over. But that's the only thing I can think of right now. That was several years ago.
Guess where I went to college? North Carolina Central. I was an exchange student.
From where?
I went there for one semester. In 1980, there were no white people living on campus. I was the only white person. And then there were like 60 white commuters who came to campus and drove because it was a state university. But I had a good experience. I wasn't mistreated, and there were very good professors there, comparable to the Midwestern universities. So, thanks. Is there anything else you wanted to say?
I don't know. It's at the end of the day, we all got to get along. You know, you can't judge the actions of a large group of people on, you know, one crazy. We got to sit down and learn how to love each other. Can't reject each other. You know what I mean? What creates extremism.
Yes, go ahead.
If anything, what creates the whole homegrown terrorism thing is this, you know, the judgment, you know, the sideways looks we cast at people, the little things that just build up and build up and, you know, alienate somebody from the society they're living in. You got to learn how to include and how to love, you know what I mean? And, you know, prepare for the worst, but hope for the best and, you know, try to hope for the best. You know what I mean?
I think, now, Don, before you start spouting off,
Don,
let me talk first. Don's the co-chair of the NAACP in Reno Sparks. My philosophy is this. I grew up in a lily white suburb of St. Paul, Minneapolis. Then I became a Navy wife, and I lived in three different states. And then eventually I settled in Los Angeles, in which there's over 300 major ethnic groups. I became friends with Polish, Armenian, Mexican, El Salvadoran, you name it. I learned a couple new languages, too. But the thing is that I never looked at one group throughout my whole life as being a major threat. Of course, with what happened with 9/11, I was about 40 at the time. I lived a mile east of downtown L.A. I was scared in terms of geography, but not because of specific Saudi Arabian or Muslim terrorists. I was just scared because of the whole incident, because I had a three-year-old child. But I never, I was scared in the sense of the gravity of the situation and three planes and two buildings going down and one damage. But I never really adopted racism on any level throughout my whole life. Now, my friend Don here, who you're going to be talking to next, he grew up in Milwaukee. His mother was the first black female cop in Milwaukee. But, Don, you've become more militant in the last few years against what you consider predatory white people.
Right. And that is more militant. I'm espousing more militarism, black civil rights justice. That's because, I felt it all around, but I had disdain for it. I could traverse any community, especially the white communities, with ease, and I could manipulate them, so easily, and so it's just unbelievable. So I never did care about. And then the caller has to understand my background. He doesn't know who I am or what exactly I've been through, but I've never had a problem getting into white culture. I'm a rock and roll. I was a hippie and college grad, all kinds of other things that I dealt with the white world all my life. I was pro caddy, so I've been always been upper middle class, so there's been no problem. So the caller has to understand that I come at everything from a totally different point of view from everyone.
Right.
So that's
all. Don and I met at the LA Times. He was sales and I was in credit and collections in 1987. Mm-hmm. What's your background?
Are you a student? I'm recently graduated.
You don't have to tell me your race, but I was just wondering, are you a student or what?
I'm a scientist. I'm a white male. That's about it.
How do you think the animosity of Donald Trump, and I don't want to describe it like that because you might be neutral, but how do you think this election is playing out with a career politician versus an outsider, Donald Trump?
Well, my main thing that I say about that is this is exactly what happens when you neglect the working class, especially when you neglect working class whites. You know what I mean? This is the kind of shit that will go down when you have an entire block of people who feel that they're not being represented, especially, not just because of who they are, but because they're showing up in numbers. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what's going on. Yeah, no.
Could I catch your first name, please?
Can I just say this? Yeah, it's Don.
Let him talk.
Yeah, no.
Your name's Donnie?
Donnie. And the, Black Lives Matter and the whole, Trump movement, they're all coming from sort of a populist perspective, you know what I mean? And it's something that's necessary, and I really hope that the rhetoric that's going back and forth between the two groups, it's just so, sick and vile and everything. But at the end of this election, one day we're all going to have to sit down and have, like, a country together, you know what I mean? And it's just getting so, so sick, you know what I mean? And
well, that's not gonna happen.
I'm hoping.
Because,
that's
know
not,
why.
That's not going to happen. There's going to be a civil war before that.
Can I just make a quick announcement, Don?
No,
the show's going to
be
ending in 6 minutes, and then we have a 15-minute break, and then we're reconnecting at midnight. So whoever wants to talk has to call back in 6 minutes. You won't be cut off on purpose. Okay, Don,
yeah.
Go ahead with your Civil War comment.
I'm done. I only wanted to say put out those two words, and that's where we're headed, because there is a, and that's, I was part of my education was philosophy and theology and all that, so you know Revelations, if you're a Christian or believe, it's coming. It's probably
I'm
here.
I'm familiar, but yeah.
But the bottom line is that there is no, there is a feeling, and this is something that I've known for decades. White men specifically, have this feeling that if I can't have it, nobody else can. They will destroy anything before they give it up to any other caste or class. And that's one of the things that I've noticed that's extremely prevalent and pervasive in white culture. I've got white kids, you know, and all kinds of other stuff. I've dealt with them all my life. And this ideal that if I can't have it, anybody can, nobody else can, is rampant, and it has to be dealt with at some point if peace is the ideal goal. Now, if you know, they might, the whites might be deluding us with propaganda saying that that's their ultimate goal, but we all know that somewhere in there, greed and the need to acquire, you know, the old saying, he who dies with the biggest, the most toys wins. That's the way that they deal with life, and unfortunately, it's piggish.
I think it depends on what part of the country, Don. Because always been in the missionary and civil rights.
I'm not talking about country.
Okay, like in Minnesota, where people
worldwide, globally.
Okay, that's true, maybe, but I do think that a lot of people who like work for NCOs and are like over in the Syrian refugee camps, I think a lot of people on an individual level aren't coveting their power.
I'm sure they are. There, whatever power is that is related to a specific realm of the world is where they are going to customize their concept of needing, of developing systemic power. That's what it's all about. You adjust to whatever environment you're in and then make the best of it with the most sophisticated plan.
Yeah, but people are not consciously taught that.
Yes, they
They're
are.
They're taught as a young child to conform and to go to college and stuff, but my family never taught me overt racism.
That's because your family was a working class family that was not necessarily a native of the United States. Were you? If I'm not mistaken, your grandparents were immigrants, right?
The Finnish relatives. My grandmother was an immigrant. My father was second generation Swedish.
Okay. All right. Well, the immigrants have a much better grasp of the minority experience, even though a lot of them acclimated to them. But it's the old establishment vanguard that has destroyed the minds of their children. Any of your genealogists or people who are deal with paternity and gene pools, the scientists may know, Donnie may know, but you know, if you believe in the purity of a gene pool going forward, that if the same genes are not eventually going to produce problematic children, then you can maintain that the purity of a race is an ideal, optimum situation. But that's not the case. That's why the Somalis are here in the first place, because the working whites